Frank edged back into the timber and watched as men hurriedly blocked the road leading out of town, while others began a building-to-building search of the town. He tensed as one man returned to the corral and walked around it, counting the horses. Frank relaxed as the man finished his count and walked away, satisfied all the horses were there.
I got into this. Now how the hell am I gonna get out of it?
Frank eased his way up to the rise where Colette was waiting.
I'm freezing to death.
Doubtful, but tonight's gonna be a different story. We gotta find a place to hole up and build a fire, or we'll be in trouble.
Maxwell got away. Help is on the way.
Maxwell is dead. I buried him early this morning.
Oh my God. Oh God, Wilma will be devastated.
Have all the women been assaulted?
No, not yet. Only two of us so far. But the outlaws are getting impatient about that. It won't be long before the rest...
Your getting away might have delayed that. Colette, if I could get you a horse, you think you could make it back to South Raven?
I don't know, Marshal. I don't even know where I am. You see, we were all blindfolded. Well, I suppose I could try.
No, forget it.
Frank looked up at the now sullen skies. The day was cloudy and cold. The night would be below freezing. Frank figured there were maybe 5 hours of good daylight left. 6 hours at the most. He made up his mind. It was going to be a bloody afternoon. Frank quickly led the way back to Stormy.
Can you saddle a horse?
No. We always had people do that for us. And certainly not one of those large Western saddles. I couldn't even lift the thing.
Looking at the woman, very pale and slender, Frank didn't doubt her for a moment. She probably hadn't picked up anything heavier than a teapot in years. And she was probably very near the end of her emotional rope.
All right. You'll be cold, but you'll be alive.
What do you mean?
They came to the little corral Frank rigged up for Stormy.
I'm gonna rig you up a lean-to using my ground sheet. I'll leave you my blankets to bundle up in. Then I'm going back to the town. Start this ball rolling.
You're going to leave me alone?
No. Stormy will be here with you. You can talk to him.
Marshal!
Keep an eye on him. Watch how he reacts to things. He'll let you know if there's any trouble.
As you say, Marshal.
Can you shoot a pistol?
Certainly not.
What the hell can these uppity Eastern women do, for Christ's sakes?
Frank finished the lean-to and pointed to it.
You get in there and stay put, Colette. There's my canteen. You'll find food in my saddlebags. I probably won't be back until tomorrow. If I'm not back by noon tomorrow, you somehow get on that horse and give him his head. He'll get you back to town. It might take him a day or two, but he'll get you back. Understood?
Yes. You're really going to do battle with all those thugs?
I don't have much of a choice, Colette, now do I?
I suppose you don't.
Frank went to a nearby creek and filled his hat with water, taking it back for Stormy to drink. He patted the animal's neck and stroked his nose for a moment, then turned to Colette.
If I don't come back, Colette, take good care of Stormy, will you? He's a good horse.
You are a strange and complex man, Marshal. Not at all, as you are portrayed in dime novels and newspaper articles. I think you are a study in contradiction.
Colette, I'm pretty simple. I do what I think is right. I don't try to control other people's lives.
We all owe you an apology.
You owe me nothing, lady. Now, watch carefully.
He showed her the workings of the .45, how to load it, cock it, aim it, and pull the trigger. He loaded it full and gave her a handful of cartridges.
If you are approached by any of the outlaws, aim for the thickest part of the body, between the waist and the neck. Understood?
Yes. I believe I could actually shoot those hoodlums.
I hope so. I'll be going now, Colette.
I wish you success, Marshal.
Frank nodded and stepped out of the brush corral, walking away. Frank stayed in the timber and took his time, circling the town, coming up at the far end, a block away from the livery. Frank believed some of the hostages were being held in the center of the short block of buildings, others in the town's only church building. Probably the men and women were separated.
Wonderful. I figured that out. Now if I could just come up with a successful plan of attack.
She ain't in town. We searched everywhere.
He didn't take no horse, neither.
Frank watched from his hiding place as Sonny, the big city bodyguard who worked for the rich folks, stepped out of a building to stand on the boardwalk about a dozen yards from where Frank crouched in the brush.
That bastard. Bet he's behind all this treachery.
Sonny confirmed the theory.
Then she's on foot in the timber and lost. Forget her. She'll die out there.
When you reckon we'll get our money, Sonny?
Frank recognized a bounty hunter from town. Sonny waved the man over to him.
By now, the kids have opened the ransom letter and set the wheels in motion. My man in Boise will get word to the telegraph agent in South Raven as soon as the lines are up. For now, we just have to wait.
So, now Frank knew they had a man in town waiting for the word. But who was he? And how about the man in Boise?
Damn.
This plan was carefully thought out by somebody. Frank didn't believe Sonny was the mastermind behind it all. Then, who could it be?
Well, hell, Sonny. That might be weeks from now.
Could be. But that's the way it was all set up. It's damn sure too late to change it now.
Well, what's gonna stop them from sending the army in here after us?
The kids won't tell anyone. We warned them in the letter. If they do, they'll never see their parents alive.
Frank had guessed right. Sonny wasn't alone in this kidnapping.
Pretty slick, Sonny. So all we gotta do is sit tight, right?
For a while. In another 3 or 4 days, we'll move again.
Sonny froze for a couple of seconds, then whirled around.
What the hell was that?
I got me a nigger, Sonny. He was snooping around and tried to run, but I spotted him. He won't run no more.
Well, that's two we got.
Double the guards on the road. I don't want any of these darky families living around here to slip through and warn anyone. Do it, Red.
Done.
The outlaw turned away, disappearing into a building.
Where we moved to, Sonny?
There's an old army fort, been deserted for years. We'll move there.
Frank realized he didn't say where it's located.
Sonny is slicker than I figured.
Frank sensed someone moving up behind him. His hands tightened on his rifle, and he prepared to whirl around and fire.
Mister, I ain't part of them outlaws. I promise you I ain't.
Frank turned around to face the voice. It was a young black girl, maybe 13 or 14 years old, peering at him from the brush in back of the line of stores. He left his hiding place and moved to her.
My name's Bessie. I live with my grandmother about a mile and a quarter from here. I seen it all.
Let's move further back into the brush.
Them's a bad bunch. I seen them kill Cassius. Shot him down right after they got here.
Frank pointed toward where he found the first body.
Over there?
Yes, sir.
He's a relative of yours?
No, sir, just a friend. Been known him since I was born. I've been talking to that white lady you hid out in the woods. You want me to take her to my cabin?
Where's your cabin?
Come on. I'll show you the path. It's hard to find if you don't know what you're looking for.
About a half mile from the town, Bessie pointed out a narrow gap through the woods.
Right through there will take you to the cabin. Cassius was going to help me and my grandmother move from here. Now he's dead, and we ain't got nobody else to help us.
You help me, Bessie, and I'll help you and your grandmother move. That's a promise.
Lots of white people say that. Don't none of them mean it.
I do.
We'll see, I reckon.
I thought there were other families living around here.
There was until last spring. The last families moved away then. Can't grow no crops here. Too hilly and rocky. My grandmother says it was a mistake to come here in the first place. But she did because my mother and father did. My folks died last year of the fever.
Does your grandmother know about these outlaws?
Sure. I told her after I spied on them and seen how they'd been treating them folks they got prisoner. They an evil bunch.
Yeah, they are. Come on, let's get back to my horse and get Colette.
You coming with us to the cabin?
Yeah, for a short time. But then I'm going back to town to help the others get away.
They too many of them for just one man.
That depends on the man.
I reckon.
An hour later, they were sitting in the small, warm cabin, drinking coffee and talking with Bessie's grandmother, Marvella. Stormy was stabled in the corral out back of the cabin.
Well, I know who you are, Frank Morgan. I've been hearing about you for years.
Who am I, Marvilla?
You a pistol man. Did you fight in the war, Frank Morgan?
I did. For the Gray.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't hold that against you. There was good and bad men on both sides. Did you hold slaves, Frank Morgan?
No, never believed in it.
Best you see about that cornbread, child. You got to have a full belly, Frank Morgan, if you're gonna fight all them men over yonder.
I could sure do with a bite, Miss Marvella. Smells mighty fine.
Sure it does. I made it. Tell me, Frank Morgan, you didn't see nor smell no smoke from the fire whilst you were coming here, did you?
No, I didn't. Whoever built this cabin knew what they were doing. All this tall timber around the cabin breaks up the smoke. Very smart.
My son did it. Died of the fever last year. He and his wife. They're buried on that little rise, looking down on the cabin he built. It's sad, though. A mother shouldn't have to bury her child.
How are you folks getting your supplies since the town became deserted?
We ain't. We're nearabouts out of everything. That's why Cassius was going to help us move out of here. Don't know what we'll do now.
I'll make sure you get moved.
And we'll get you moved into a nice house.
Colette surprised Frank.
Right nice of you, ma'am. But why would you do that for us?
For the same reason you helped me.
She looked at Frank and smiled.
Us.
Bessie, you cut up that cornbread and give half of it to Frank Morgan. He's got to have something to take with him back to Freetown.
Yes, sir.
Frank did not protest. He knew it would do no good.
You must be a man who's real sure of himself, Frank Morgan. One man again, all that trash back in town. Bessie, you wrap up that cornbread in some clean cloth now, you hear?
Yes, sir.
With the wrapped-up cornbread tucked inside his jacket, Frank picked up his rifle and headed for the door. Marvella gave him two heavy quilts to use if he wound up spending the night in the lean-to. Frank turned to the women as his hand fell on the door latch.
You know how to use that shotgun I saw over in the corner, Marvella?
I surely do, Frank Morgan. And I got me a bag of shells for it, too.
Good. Just don't shoot me with it.
You give out a holler when you get back, Mr. Morgan.
I'll do that for sure. All right, then. I'll see you ladies later on.
Frank opened the door and stepped out onto the porch, pausing for a moment. He would head first to the lean-to to cash the food and quilts, and then head to Freetown for a showdown. It was the middle of the afternoon before Frank returned to the outskirts of Freetown. Only a couple of hours of good daylight left. The two buildings he guessed were holding the hostages were heavily guarded, front and back. Frank would not attempt to breach that security. Not yet. First, he would take out any outlaw he could find wandering alone around the edges of town, if any were that stupid. Frank moved back into the timber. He was amazed Sonny didn't post more guards around the town. Sonny was just too sure of himself, without the experience to back up that self-assurance. But Frank knew the odds were still very strong against him succeeding in this plan, whatever his plan might be. He carefully made his way to the church and crouched in the timber behind the building. He must get the women out first and get them to safety. He could not let the raping continue. He tensed as the back door to the church opened and a man with a lantern stepped out, heading for the outhouse.
Don't let no monster get you, Jones.
I don't believe in them things. And don't you touch that redhead whilst I'm gone. I want me another taste of that one.
You won't get another taste, you bastard.
Frank's hand closed around a chunk of wood. Jones opened the door to the outhouse and set the lantern inside on the floor. Frank quickly and silently moved up behind the man and smacked the outlaw on the head. He caught him before he could tumble to the ground. Stretching the outlaw on the ground, he jerked Jones' six gun from leather, stuck it behind his own gun belt, then quickly pulled the man's belt from his breeches and secured his hands behind his back. Frank closed the door, then dragged Jones a dozen yards behind the outhouse and left him. He didn't know if he'd fractured Jones' skull or if the man might be dying. Frank didn't care. Kidnappers, rapists, and murderers were among those who deserved no mercy.
One down.
And there was still 30 or so to go. Frank slipped up to a church window and looked through the crack. He could see four guards, widely separated, one on each side of the large room. There was no way he could shoot them all and get the women into the timber. The other gun hands in the town would be all over him before he could accomplish that. Frank was stymied as to what to do next. He listened as the footsteps of several men struck the wood of the old boardwalk, then faded as the men stepped off the boardwalk.
Damn. Now what?
He slipped back into the darkness, circled around to the far side of the church, crouched beneath another boarded-up window, waited and listened. He heard the front door open.
Everything all right here, Woolsey?
Okay.
Where's Jones?
On the whole. Did y'all find the monster?
You son of a bitch. There ain't no monsters, Woolsey. Did you talk to some of the other boys? Because a few boys damn sure believe it. They're talking about pulling out come morning. Sonny's trying to talk some sense into him now.
Oh, shit. I was just having some fun. Stupid rubes. How's Claude and Jeff?
Claude is all right. Looks like Jeff ain't gonna make it. His head is all busted and swole up. He's talking crazy stuff.
No creature did that to them boys.
No. Sonny figures it's Morgan.
Morgan? Here?
Yeah.
That ain't good news. Morgan ain't afraid to tackle a tornado.
He can't fight 30 of us. Sonny's thinking up a plan now if he tries it.
If that's Morgan out there slipping around, he ain't trying it, Brownie. He's doing it.
Relax, Davis. Just take it easy.
Easy hell. I don't like the idea of Frank Morgan slipping around in the dark. I'd rather it was a monster.
None of you will get away with this. You'll all hang.
Shut up, lady. Just keep your mouth shut and you'll live through this. Keep flapping your gums and we'll bury you out yonder in the dump.
You are vile, disgusting men. All of you. What have you done with my husband?
He's alive. He begs right good. He's more concerned with his own hide than with yours. He said we could have you if we just turn him loose.
I don't believe that.
Then you don't know your husband at all, lady. He's been begging and a-sobbing and a-carrying on like a baby.
Fuller has never begged for anything in his life.
Teddy, you and Burke bring your husband over here and have him say to her face what he done told us. That'll be fun. Then he can watch us strip her down and have a poke at her.
Frank's breath steamed in the cold air. He could not wait any longer. He didn't think he had a chance of getting all the women free, but he sure had to try. Frank moved around to the front of the church and waited by the side of the steps. The door opened, and Teddy and Burke stepped out, closing the door behind them. Frank waited until they had stepped down to ground level before he eared back the hammer on his 45.
You boys stand real still and I'll let you live. Make any loud noises, they'll be your last.
Morgan?
That's me. And you boys know I'll kill you.
We ain't moving. We ain't moving nothing but our mouths, Morgan. What do you want?
You boys walk back up the steps. I'll be a step behind you. You open the door when I tell you. Understood?
They nodded their understanding.
When you're inside, you step to one side. You make a try for your guns. I'll kill you first.
You're crazy, Morgan. You can't buffalo everybody in that church. Somebody's gonna make a play for their guns. If you shoot, this place will be surrounded by men in seconds. Yeah, you're already in trouble, Morgan. You gotta come Sonny. Now what are you gonna do?
Frank cut his eyes. Sonny was walking toward the church for a fact, carrying a lantern.
We'll just wait for him, boys. This is either gonna go real smooth, or it's gonna get bloody real fast.
I ain't looking to die, Morgan. You keep that in mind.
Whether you live or die is up to you.
I feel the same way about dying, Morgan.
To stay cool and collected, boys.
Sonny walked up, and before he could raise the lantern to see who it was on the steps, Frank shoved the muzzle of his 45 under the man's chin.
Stand easy, Sonny. Don't make a sound.
Morgan, you son of a bitch.
We're all going into the church, Sonny. And if you behave, you'll live. Get my meaning?
I got it.
Good. Move.
Opening the door, Morgan.
Go ahead.
The outlaws pushed open the door and stepped in, Morgan crowding in close behind them. As Teddy and Burke moved to one side, Frank again stuck the muzzle of his pistol under Sonny's chin and pulled him to one side.
What the hell?
Shut up. Tell him, Sonny.
You boys keep your hands away from your weapons. Do what Morgan tells you to do.
And if we don't?
Sonny dies, and you boys never know who your contacts are in Boise and South Raven. You get no ransom money. Think about it.
If you take the rich folks out of here, we get no money no way, right?
I'm taking the women and leaving the men. So your glass is still half full, or half empty. Depends on your point of view.
I reckon that's so. Now what, Morgan?
You boys shuck those guns, and do it real careful-like. Put them on the floor and back away from them. All you get over there in the corner at the far end of the building.
He moved his head, indicating the corner.
Start moving. Right now.
The outlaws hesitated. Frank again eared back the hammer of his .45.
God damn it, move, boys. Don't do anything stupid or we're all in trouble.
He can't take us all, Sonny.
He can take me. And I'm the only one who knows all the details about this kidnapping. If I die, you're all leaving here as broke as the day you were born.
The outlaws put their guns on the floor and slowly moved to the corner of the building. Frank still held Sonny under his gun.
You ladies get into your coats and move over to the wall to my left. But stay clear of me. Don't get between me and the outlaws. Move.
The women quickly obeyed.
You men get out of your winter coats. Throw them into the center of the room. Do it.
What the hell are you up to, Morgan?
Getting clear of here without killing anyone else. You want to be the one who spoils my plan?
I didn't say that. I just asked a question. That's all I done.
I answered it.
Shut up, Davis. For God's sake, close your mouth.
Some of you women pick up those coats. Do it carefully. Rest of you gather up those pistols.
Now what, Morgan?
Strip. Peel it all off right down to your skin.
What?
Several of the women smiled.
Strip, damn it, right now. Boots and clothing in the center of the room.
He pushed Sonny a few feet away.
You too, big man. Do it.
Frank chanced a glance at a couple of the women.
You ladies get their boots and clothing. Bundle it up tight and secure it with their belts and galluses. Do it quickly, ladies.
The outlaws were soon naked and shivering, doing their best to cover their privates with their hands.
You son of a bitch! I'll cut your balls off for this!
Yours have shriveled to the size of peanuts!
Damn you, Crawford! I should have beat your husband more!
That's enough. You ladies, out the back door. Move it, ladies. Let's get the hell gone from here.
Outside, Frank hurried the women into the timber and paused for a few seconds.
We got about 3 or 4 minutes, ladies, at the most. Follow me and don't say a word. Try not to break off any twigs or low-hanging branches. Let's go.
Frank led the women into the timber. They were well away from the old town before the shouting began. He took them to the lean-to for a rest before pushing on.
Where are you taking us, Mr. Morgan?
Mrs. Edmonds, I'm taking you to where I have Colette hidden.
She's unhurt?
Yes.
Our husbands? What about them?
After I get you to safety, I'll go back and try to free them. But I can't promise anything. I gotta be honest about that, Mrs. Vanderhoot.
I'm Mrs. Steele, Mr. Morgan. What you did for us was very brave. You risked your own life when you certainly didn't have to. Not after the way we behaved toward you. I shall see you are compensated quite handsomely.
Does that amuse you, Mr. Morgan?
In a way. Pardon me, ma'am. What's your name?
Clovis Knox.
You see, Mrs. Knox, I didn't do this for money. I assure you, I have enough money to last me several lifetimes.
Then the rumors about you and Mrs. Browning are true?
I don't know what all the rumors say, ma'am. But Vivian and I were married right after the war between the states. Conrad is my son.
I knew Vivian. Most of us here did. She was a fine woman, and Conrad is a very handsome young man.
Then you came to rescue us because you are a United States Marshal?
I guess so, Margaret. Yes, ma'am.
You still risked your life.
I reckon so. My ladies, let's move out. We got a ways to go before you can relax and get really warm.
Praise God! You had the good Lord with you this day, Frank Morgan.
I reckon I did, Miss Marvella.
But you ain't got a chance in hell of getting these ladies' husbands free from that trash, do you?
I reckon that's so. I expect by the time I get back to town tomorrow, they'll all be long gone to that old fort. And I don't know where that is.
I do.
Frank lifted his eyes and smiled at the old woman.
I had a hunch you did.
I'll draw you a map. It's on the North Fork of the Boise River, halfway between the North Fork and the Middle Fork.
That's a ways from South Raven.
It is for a fact.
Frank sat before the fireplace, drinking coffee and smoking. The women were sprawled all over the cabin, all of them sleeping heavily.
So Sonny is probably planning a double cross. He doesn't have a man at South Raven, but he has one in Boise. He'll be the one to ride in and collect the money. That'll be the last any of the outlaws will see of him. Clever. Well, Sonny, I'll damn sure see you again.
Frank left the cabin long before dawn to return to Freetown, young Bessie with him. His suspicions a few hours back proved correct. The town was now devoid of human life. The outlaws had pulled out in a hurry, leaving behind many articles of clothing, food, and more importantly, a corral full of horses, the saddles in the old barn.
How come they left the horses, Mr. Frank?
Good question, Bessie. One guess is they didn't want to be slowed down by herding them along. I'll saddle up a horse for you. You ride back to your cabin and get the others. Let your grandmother ride on the way back here. Will you do that?
Sure, I will.
I'll have the horses saddled up and ready to go by the time you get back. Don't let the others tarry, Bessie.
I won't. I'll make them hurry.
Moments after Bessie rode off, Frank was prowling the town. He found the outlaw called Jeff in the back room of a building. The man was drifting in and out of consciousness, not long for this world. Frank squatted down beside the dying outlaw.
Oh, is that you, Claude?
No, it's Frank Morgan.
I can't see you, Claude. My eyes has quit working and my head is hurting something awful. Can you get me something for the pain?
I don't have anything, Jeff. Where'd the others go?
To the fort, Claude. They said they'd send a doctor back for me.
I won't leave you, Jeff.
You a good friend, Claude?
Once more, Jeff lapsed into unconsciousness. Frank left the man and went to saddle the horses. When he returned, Jeff was still unconscious, his breathing very bad. Frank doubted the man would ever wake up. He went outside to smoke a cigarette. The day was sunny and bright, the sky an impossible blue. It was cold, with no wind.
Claude!
When Frank reached the man's side, Jeff was dead. Blood leaked out of his nose and mouth, the flow of crimson ceasing when the man's heart stopped. Frank covered the man with a blanket, walked out, closed, and locked the door. The old building was as good a grave as the ground. Frank walked the town. The bodies of Cassius and the other black man the outlaw shot were gone. Frank didn't know what happened to them. A quick search failed to locate them. The outlaws might have hauled the bodies off into the timber or tossed them in the trash dump. Frank called off his search and began gathering up what food the outlaws left and filling saddlebags with the canned goods. He rolled the few blankets left behind and tied them behind the saddles. By the time he finished, Bessie was leading the women into the town.
We can't stop to rest, ladies. We gotta make time. We're burning daylight and we got a ways to go.
Our husbands?
Gone, Mrs. Ross.
He pulled Colette to one side.
Did you tell Wilma about her husband?
Yes. She wants to see his grave.
We'll be there tomorrow. Not that far from here. We can spend some time there, and Wilma can pay her respects to Maxwell.
They weren't a very happy couple, Frank.
So I heard from a friend of hers in town.
Dr. Raven?
Yeah.
I suspect she'll return to this country after the estate is settled.
Could be. Let's ride.
It was slow going on the trail. During captivity, several of the women had received repeated beatings. They were bruised, sore, and had to stop for rest several times. They spent the night in the ghost town of Red Rock. Prowling around, the women found several old pots and kettles and heated water to wash up in, then set about making some semblance of supper out of the food the outlaws left behind. They were all sound asleep just after dark. The next morning, Frank was the first one out of his blankets. He stoked up the fire and put on water for coffee, then slipped into his winter coat and stepped outside for an early morning smoke. He didn't tarry with his cigarette. The air was very cold. He was back into the warmth of the old home in a very few minutes and poured a cup of coffee. He turned as Wilma Crawford walked into the room.
Good morning, Mrs. Crawford.
Morning. Please, call me Wilma, won't you, Frank?
If you would like that, certainly. Coffee?
Please.
Frank poured her a cup and set it in front of her.
Thank you. Did my husband die well, Frank?
Yes, he did, Wilma. He conducted himself very well at the end.
Mavis's husband offered her in exchange for the beatings to stop.
I heard that. You think it's true?
Oh, yes. I have no difficulty at all believing every word of it.
Mrs. Ross, does she believe it?
She's maintaining a strong and stoic face, but yes, she believes it.
Tough way to learn what her husband is made of.
About half of these men are heirs, Frank. They didn't personally earn their wealth. They inherited it.
Their daddies gave it to them.
Precisely. And they have very skilled men working for them to ensure they'll make more money.
While they play around.
Yes. Don't misunderstand what I say, Frank. These men are not stupid. They all have fine educations and they understand business. But they have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. And they have so much time on their hands.
And they have never been tested as men.
They've never been tested as human beings, Frank. Not in my opinion.
Frank smiled as his fingers were busy rolling another cigarette. He held it up.
You mind if I smoke?
Not at all.
Thanks. We need to be thinking of getting the others up if we want to make town today.
In a little while. I enjoy talking with you.
Strange that a lady of your standing would say that. I'm not very genteel, Wilma.
You're real, Frank. And I can't tell you what a relief it is to speak with someone who knows life.
Frank smiled as he popped a match into flame.
I'd be lost in your city, Wilma.
You're going after the outlaws, Frank?
Oh, yeah.
Alone?
Probably. I'd rather have it that way, really.
Wilma and Frank looked toward the archway as Nellie Vanderhoot walked into the room, her eyes still puffy from hours of deep sleep.
Oh, I must look a fright.
She ran fingers through her hair.
Oh, is that coffee?
It is, and it's good and strong. I believe it's called cowboy coffee, isn't it, Frank?
I reckon you could call it that. Most Westerners like their coffee strong. Some folks say you could float a horseshoe in it.
Frank says we'll be back in South Raven today.
Oh, a long hot bath and clean clothing. I do so look forward to that.
And then the wait for our... your husband's.
I'm sorry, Wilma. I know you must be feeling your loss terribly. You've been so brave about it.
You'd better prepare yourself for the worst, Nellie.
I'm trying. The chances for all our husbands coming out of this ordeal alive are not very good. Are they, Mr. Morgan?
Not real good, Mrs. Vanderhoot. I gotta be honest about that.
My name is Nellie, please. May I address you as Frank?
I wish you would. Mister sounds sorta stuffy.
Actually, we're rather stuffy people. Arrogant might be a better description.
It's the way you were brought up. The West has a way of bringing out either the worst or the best in people.
I've certainly been humbled.
She took another sip of coffee and sat down.
Will we have time to hold a small service for Maxwell, Frank?
We'll make time, Nellie. I think Maxwell would rest easier after that.
Providing some bear hasn't toted the body off and ate it, he thought. Marvella and Bessie were the next ones up. Over the protests of Frank, Nellie, and Wilma, Marvella set about slicing bacon and frying it, then made a big skillet of pan bread. Bessie made another pot of coffee.
I hate to eat anything them damn trash had their hands on, but I ain't one to waste food.
We'll have you say a breakfast prayer over it, Marvella. That ought to take care of it.
I plans on doing that, Frank Morgan. I does that for every meal. And I'll say me a prayer for you, too. Thanks. And good hunting.
I need it.
I knows that, too. I allow it how you needs it in more ways than one.
You're sure right about that, Marvella. You purely are.
Everyone had a good meal to start the day. Frank went out to saddle the horses while the ladies rolled up bedding, secured and stowed away pots and skillets and the coffee pot. Frank had another cup of coffee, and they were on the road just as the gold was chasing away the last bits of silver from the eastern skyline.
Will we make town this day?
Ethel Steele wriggled around a little, trying to ease her butt a bit in the western saddle.
We should be riding into South Raven by late afternoon.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I can't wait.
Marvella smiled as Frank cut his eyes at the old woman. She was as tough as wang leather and carried her double-barreled shotgun over one shoulder by a sling. Frank had no doubts about her capability and willingness to use the weapon. Frank led them toward the cabin where he buried Maxwell Crawford. The day was sunny and cool, and they made good time. Wilma rode up beside Frank, and they rode in silence for a few minutes.
Is it far now, Frank?
Just over the next rise. I wrapped him in a blanket and piled rocks over his body.
I'm glad you warned me about that.
I figured I better. It's the best I could do without a shovel. You can make arrangements to move the body later.
She nodded her head as the tears began trickling silently down her cheeks. The service at Maxwell's gravesite was brief, with the group backing away afterward, allowing Wilma a few moments alone with Maxwell.
Oh, it's a beautiful spot. So peaceful and quiet.
You suppose she'll have the body returned to New York?
I don't know, Eudora, but I wouldn't. I'd buy the land and create a permanent memorial.
That's a good idea, Clovis. I'll suggest that to her. Do you think that would be an inappropriate suggestion?
I don't, Nellie. I think it's a good idea. What's under those rocks now is just the shell of the man. The soul has gone on.
Oh, that's lovely, Frank. You continue to surprise us all.
Frank did not reply to that. It just made good sense to him. Wilma walked over to the group, wiping her eyes.
I'm ready to go. There is nothing more to do or say here.
A few hours later, Frank led the group into the town of South Raven. The residents gathered along the sides of the street and watched in silence. Swinging down from the saddle, Frank motioned to Phil, the bartender at the saloon cum hotel.
Get some rooms ready for the ladies, Phil.
Already done that, Frank. The Stover boy spotted y'all about a mile out and coming to run to tell us.
Doc Raven helped Wilma down from her horse and stood looking at her for a moment, while local men assisted the other ladies.
I'd never have been able to pull this off without the help of Marvella and Bessie, Doc. I want them treated right. Anyone in town who doesn't will answer to me.
There are few prejudices in this town, Frank. I didn't fight for the Gray because I believed in slavery or that colored folks were inferior.
I know, Doc. Don't get your hackles up. I just wanted to let you know where I stood, that's all.
Marvella and Bessie will be well provided for. I will insist on that.
As will I.
Frank walked over to the boardwalk and sat down. He was beat, weary to the bone. He wanted nothing more than a drink, a hot meal, a bath, and a bed. Doc Raven walked over and sat down beside him.
You all right, Frank?
Just tired, Doc.
Wilma told me about Maxwell.
He died well. I can say that much about him for sure.
When do you go out to the others?
In the morning. And before you ask, no, I don't want a posse.
All right, Frank. By the way, many of the bounty hunters left town the same day you did. Some of them, I believe, went in search of the kidnappers.
To join with them, probably.
That's my theory, yes. Some just drifted away, but let me warn you about this. Dolan is still in town, making talk about what he's going to do to you.
I'm easy to find, Doc, and if he tries it today, I'll settle it today. I'm in no mood to be charitable.
Liveryman Bob walked up.
Dolan just stepped out of the saloon. He's been making a lot of talk about you, Frank.
Frank looked toward the saloon. Dolan was standing on the boardwalk, smoking a cigar and looking in his direction.
He's going to call me out in a couple of minutes.
I'll get the women and kids off the street.
Telegraph wires up yet, Doc?
Not yet.
Anyone checked on the progress of the road clearing?
Crews are still working on it. It'll be clear in a few days. Wilma says the women don't want any outside interference in this situation.
That's right. That would be a death sentence for their husbands.
You believe the outlaws really killed the hostages?
I do.
As soon as the wires are up and the stage starts running, somebody is going to talk about it. You can't keep something this big quiet.
Then I'd better not waste any time in finding them.
Frank rolled a cigarette and popped a match into flame.
Dolan just stepped off the boardwalk and into the street.
I see him.
What is happening here? The street is suddenly deserted.
A shootout. Please, get inside, Wilma.
This is ridiculous. Why in the world would that man want to start a fight with Frank?
To see who is the fastest.
Before Wilma could respond to that, Frank towed out his cigarette and stood up, stepping out into the street. He turned to face Dolan, still more than half a block away.
I told you I'd call you out, Frank.
Frank said nothing. He stood in the middle of the street and waited.
Big hero now, huh, Frank? Rescued all the women? Hell, I could have done that myself, but nobody asked me.
Behind closed doors, the locals waited. Gunslingers began stepping out of the saloon and the cafe to line the boardwalks. They would not interfere in this matter. That would violate the unwritten code.
You gonna answer me, Morgan?
Frank made no reply. He knew Dolan was working up his courage.
Damn you, Morgan!
Frank waited. Dolan began slowly walking toward Frank.
What's the matter, Morgan? You got nothing to say?
Why don't you shut that flapping mouth of yours, Dolan?
Huh?
I told you, I got no beef with you. But if you're gonna do this, make your play, or shut the hell up and go away. I'm tired of listening to you.
Are you that anxious to die, Morgan?
Shut up. I'm tired and hungry and I want a bath. What I don't want is any more lip from you. Now either pull iron or shut your mouth.
Damn your hide!
Dolan grabbed for his gun. Frank Morgan drew and fired his .45 so swiftly and cleanly, it was almost too fast for the human eye to follow. Frank's bullet hit Dolan in the chest, and the bounty hunter sat down in the dirt of the street, a very startled expression on his face.
I'll be damned.
Dolan lifted his six gun and managed to cock it, but he could not raise the weapon enough to point it at Frank.
You killed me. You killed me, you bastard.
Sure looks like it.
It ain't supposed to be this way.
It never is, Dolan.
Somebody's gonna get you, Morgan.
It's the way it usually plays out.
Dolan looked at Frank walking toward him, then fell over in the dirt.
I can't breathe. I'll see you in hell, Morgan.
Dolan closed his eyes and died.
If there is such a place, you're right.
Frank slipped his .45 back into leather and walked away toward the saloon. He pushed his way past the line of gunslicks crowding the boardwalk, opened the door, and walked up to the bar.
Coffee, please. Make sure it's hot.
Yes, sir. Come right up. You betcha.
The gun handlers walked back into the saloon and either took seats or lined up at the bar. They were very quiet, none of them making eye contact with Frank.
I'll get the coffee, Jim.
Phil stepped in from the hotel lobby.
You serve the others.
And make that coffee for us, too, Phil.
Bob and Doc Raven entered the saloon and came to Frank's side.
I believe, Frank, you are the fastest gun I have ever seen in all my years out here.
I'm still alive, Doc.
I talked to that fella you released from jail, Frank. He came back into town to buy some supplies. He made it a point to look me up and tell me it was Jackson Mills who paid him to kill you.
Why the hell didn't he tell me that when I asked him?
Maybe he was that afraid of you, Frank.
Did you believe him? Do you think it was Mills who paid him?
I don't have any reason to doubt it or to believe it.
What kind of answer is that, Doc?
The best one I can come up with.
I think you got Wilma on what's left of your mind.
Well, you're right about that. I haven't been able to get her off my mind since the day she arrived.
Frank sugared his coffee and stirred it slowly.
I was real lucky in getting the women loose, Doc. I won't be that lucky with the men.
The ladies told me you've already talked to them about that. I believe they're prepared for the worst.
They better be. Doc, as soon as I finish this coffee, I'm going to take a bath, then provision up so I can take off early in the morning. Then I'm going to get something to eat, go visit with Wolf for a time, and go to bed.
I won't see you in the morning?
Doubtful. I'll be pulling out long before dawn. Marvella drew me a map. I'm heading cross-country till I cut the old road to the fort.
You and Stormy getting along?
He's a fine animal. You sure you still want to trade?
Absolutely. I've been exercising horse every day. We get along just fine, but Wolf misses you.
I'll sleep in the barn tonight, just so he won't think I've run off and deserted him.
Use the storeroom. It's got a little pot-bellied in it, and there's lots of wood behind the barn. You'll be a lot warmer in there.
Thanks. I'll do that.
There's a cot in there, too.
Good.
Let me provision up for you, Frank. That'll save you a little time.
I appreciate that. I need a bath in the worst way. I'm beginning to smell a little rank.
And now that you mention it.
Frank, about 10 or 12 of the hired guns has left town. I don't know for sure, but mayhaps they left to go join with the kidnappers. Just to be with their own kind. Look around you. See who's missing.
I have, Bob.
You can't fight all them people. That'd be suicide.
Can't see I have much choice in the matter. If we call the law in on this, the hostages are dead for sure. I don't have a doubt in my mind that Sonny would kill him. He wouldn't hesitate.
Wilma told me several of the women expressed doubts about him from the beginning. Said they just didn't trust him.
They should have trusted their instincts. I'll see you, boys.
Good luck, Frank.
Take care of Marvella and Bessie. I never have made it without them.
Will do, and good hunting.
Frank walked out of the saloon. Frank did not know what to expect once he reached the long deserted army fort. He knew there would be no towns near the place. He suspected the old road leading to the fort would be overgrown from lack of use. Boise was probably a good 50 miles away from the fort. He traveled light, not taking a pack horse. If he ran out of food, he would kill a deer or live on rabbits and squirrels, as he'd done many times in the past. How did he get himself into these fixes? More importantly, why did he get himself into these fixes? Why didn't he just move to Canada and live peacefully under a false name? He certainly had the money to do so. Frank settled more comfortably in the saddle.
Because I'm Frank Morgan. I've been Frank Morgan for 40-some years. That's my name, and I'll be damned if I'm gonna run away and live under a name that isn't my own.
Frank headed cross-country, riding north for a time, then cutting almost due west. He couldn't be sure, but he figured he was probably paralleling the outlaws and their hostages, with them being north of the route he was taking. This was tough, rugged country, inhabited by only a few brave souls. Frank couldn't imagine how they eked out a living. The days were bright and sunny, and the nights downright cold. Frank traveled the passes and the valleys, avoiding the high-up country most of the time. Stormy liked the trail, and he had a pleasing, comfortable gait that ate up the miles. On his second day out, Frank smelled smoke and headed toward it. He reined up about 50 yards from the camp.
Hello, the campfire.
If you're friendly, come on in. If you're unfriendly, you best ride on.
I'm friendly. Just looking for a place to noon and rest my horse.
Come on in.
The two men looked to be prospectors, and the meat they were frying up and the coffee they were boiling sure smelled good.
Smells mighty good, fellas.
We'll be ready in a few minutes. Light and sit.
I got the fixings for some pan bread, if you like some.
Ooh, that'd be tasty. We ran out of flour a couple days ago.
He peered at Frank for several seconds.
You, look familiar. We ever crossed trails before?
Dunno. Name is Morgan.
Frank Morgan?
That's me.
Great God Almighty. It is you. I seen your picture on the cover of one of them, dime books one time.
But what are you doing out here in the wilderness, Mr. Morgan?
Not that it's any of our business, mind you.
Just wandering, boys. Staying away from people, mostly. You haven't seen any big bunches of people close by, have you?
We sure have. Early this morning we did. I mean to tell you, they was some hard cases for sure.
We fought shy of them, Mr. Morgan. Then about 2 hours later, here come another bunch of hard cases, riding hard in the same direction. About a dozen or so of them. I don't know what's going on or where they was going, but we sure didn't want to be nowheres close by.
Frank set the skillet on the rocks by the fire and waited while his cup was filled up with the hot brew.
I wonder where they're heading.
I wouldn't have no idea. If they heading for Boise, they need to cut south some and get off the road. Be a lot easier going. If they stay due west like they're going, they ain't nothing except what's left of that old army fort.
Army fort? I didn't know there was a fort in this area.
There ain't no more. The army pulled out years ago. The stone building's still there, that's about all.
I never knew about that fort.
Not too many people does. Hell, it was built in the middle of nowheres. I never knew why the army built it there.
Must be a road to it.
Not no more. Just a trace where it used to be. You couldn't get no wagon down it now. It's all growed up.
Well, I'll make it a point not to get anywhere near the place.
It'd be smart of you to do that.
Frank left the two old prospectors and once more hit the trail. Frank figured his odds. If the gunslicks that left South Raven joined up with the kidnappers, they would bring the total to over 40 men. He didn't know what to do.
If you had any sense at all, you'd just ride on and forget the whole damn thing.
But he knew he couldn't do that.
We're gonna be in for a rough time of it, Stormy. I'm just too hard-headed to quit.
Frank stopped a couple of hours before dark and put the hobbles on Stormy. He rigged up a makeshift lean-to, then gathered up several armloads of dry leaves to spread on the ground. He laid his ground sheet over the leaves and unrolled his blankets. He quickly built a fire, put the coffee water on to boil, and set about gathering up enough dry firewood to last him through the cold night. Frank fried up some bacon and made some pan bread, using that to sop up the bacon grease. He had a cup of coffee and a cigarette, sat and smoked while the last rays of the sun disappeared and shadows began creeping in. As he smoked and drank his coffee, Frank concluded he was far from any town. He also figured he couldn't be more than a day and a half behind the outlaws. He knew that in rough country, a lone rider could make better time than a large gathering. Of course, he still did not have the foggiest notion what he was going to do once he did make the fort. Frank pulled his blankets around him.
Ah, damn.
His breath steamed the cold evening air. Frank shot a deer the next afternoon. He hated to do it, for most of the meat would go to waste. He didn't have enough time to jerk any. He cut off the back strap and then a haunch to roast. The cooked meat would keep until he reached the fort. Just as he was stowing the meat, he felt eyes on him and turned around. A group of Indians watched from the timber, well away from him. Frank stood up and made the sign of peace. The Indians returned the sign. Frank rubbed his stomach and pointed to the deer, then pointed to the two males, two females, and several kids. One of the men nodded his head and smiled. Frank mounted up and rode off. feeling better now that he knew the meat from the deer would not go to waste, and a family would eat well that day. That evening, he put the roast on to cook and fried up some of the backstrap. He ate his fill, leaned back just under his lean-to, and looked out the front at the canopy of stars. Frank topped a ridge, looking down into a long valley. The old fort stood clearly visible. Most of the log walls were rotted away, but many of the buildings remained. The stone buildings would be there until someone tore them down. There wasn't much danger of anyone accidentally stumbling upon the ruins of the old fort. The fort was miles and miles away from any town or established road. No one lived within at least 30 miles of the place. Frank spent an entire day doing a wide circle of the place and found no sign of human habitation beyond the fort. Frank rode into the timber and dismounted, walking back to the ridge overlooking the old fort. He began studying the layout with his field glasses. There were four guards, one at each corner of the place.
Bad move, sonny. If you were in the military, you must have spent your time in an office, because you sure don't know crap about posting guards.
Frank found at least two easy ways into the ruins without running much risk of being spotted, thanks to the bad placement of the guards.
Getting in will be easy. It's getting out that might be a problem.
Frank studied the ravine running right up to the fort.
I'll go in and out that way tonight. Prowl around some. Somebody put a lot of thought into this kidnapping plan. Somebody other than Sonny transported supplies to this place and stored them. So there was more than just one man working on this end of it. Probably operated out of Boise. Well, I'll just worry about that end of it later. Right now, I got plenty to do here.
At full dark, Frank slipped into the ravine and began slowly making his way toward the ruins of the old fort. He left his spurs in his saddlebags and wore or carried nothing that would rattle. There was lamp and candlelight showing through the cracks in the boarded-up windows of the buildings within the compound, enforcing Frank's belief that someone did a bit of work to the buildings long before the actual kidnapping took place. He slipped up to the larger of the stone buildings and listened to the hum of conversation taking place inside.
Lonesome, how come you boys think you can just ride in here and deal yourselves into this game?
You don't have a lot of choice in the matter, Stoner. You either deal us in or try to kill us all. And if you try any gunplay, a lot of you are going to die. Think about that.
It ain't fair. We done all the work, and now you boys want a piece of the cake? It ain't fair.
Nothing is fair, Woolsey. Them rich folks got their millions by working the poor man to death in their mines and railroads and factories. Think about that.
You gonna give your share to the poor, Lonesome?
In a way, yes I am. I'm gonna build me a church with my share and preach the gospel to the poor sinners.
Who in the hell would come to listen to you? That's crazy, Lonesome. Of course, you are crazy, so I guess it makes sense to you.
Crazy like a fox, Davis. But you go on believing what you like. Women like for preachers to poke them. Think about that. You'll be spending your money on soiled doves and rot-gut whiskey. But fine-looking country women will be knocking on my church door, all hot to bed down with me. Now who's crazy?
That man's got a plan. I gotta admit that. That's right good thinking, Lonesome. Can I be one of your choir members?
Absolutely not, Teddy. Once I get my hands on that money, I ain't having no more to do with the likes of you godless heathens.
Frank slipped around to another of the stone buildings and peeked in through another boarded-up window. Sonny was talking with a couple of men.
Let Lonesome and that bunch from town think they're in tight with us. We'll gather them all in one building just before I go into town for the money and kill them. That'll take care of that little problem.
I'll be damned.
That would, sure enough, take care of the problem.
How about Morgan? We know he's coming after us.
What about him, Brownie? He's just one man. When he gets here, we'll kill him.
I might have something to say about that.
Frank spent about an hour the next morning watching the old fort through his field glasses. He soon tired of it because there wasn't a lot of movement to observe. Before sleep dropped him into rest the previous night, Frank thought of a dozen plans for freeing the hostages and rejected them all. Now, watching the old fort, he was forced to admit he was stymied. If he tried to free the men one at a time, that would put the others at risk. Frank picked up his field glasses as two men walked out of a small building and started swinging at each other. Each got in some pretty good licks before one of the men stepped back and pulled his pistol. The other man held one hand out in front of him and shook his head. The word no was forming on his lips. The man dropped to the cold ground and did not move. The shooter walked to him and looked down as he holstered his six gun. Another man walked out of the building and shot the gunman in the back. The gunslick dropped to his knees, a horrible expression on his face, then fell forward to die by the body of the man he'd shot. The building emptied of men. Sonny and several other men ran out of one of the larger stone buildings and confronted the back shooter and those siding with him. Frank could not, of course, hear any of the words, but he could tell the conversation was heated due to the gestures of the men. Sonny began pointing to something. The back shooter jerked his hat off his head and threw it on the ground, shaking his head in a negative way. A dozen men, including Lonesome Howard and the Olsen cousins, came out of another building, all armed with rifles, and lined up with Sonny. The back shooter and the half-dozen men who sided with him looked around them for a moment as Sonny told them something. They all nodded their heads and turned away, walking back into the building. Frank lowered the field glasses, resting his eyes for a moment from the pull of the heavy magnification.
Interesting. Now, let's see what happens.
After a few minutes, the half-dozen men came outside, carrying their bedrolls and saddlebags. They began walking toward the corral, all under the watchful eyes of Sonny and his men. Frank watched them saddle their horses and mount up. They slowly rode past Sonny and his men. Just as they reached what was left of the gate entrance to the old fort, Sonny and his men lifted their rifles and opened fire. All but one of the men were knocked out of the saddle. The one man who remained mounted slumped over his horse's neck as the frightened animal bolted, racing out of the ruins. The wounded man hung on. Sonny and his men continued firing as the horse turned toward the ridge where Frank was watching, putting some old buildings between the rider and the rifle fire. The rider reached the timber and was out of sight. Sonny pointed toward a man. The man ran for the corral. Moments later, he was riding out of the ruins in pursuit of the wounded man. Frank watched the activity in the old fort for a moment longer. The other men showed no interest in riding after the wounded man and his pursuer. Frank left his hiding place and slipped through the timber, heading in the direction the wounded man had taken.